You're listening to Star Wars Splash Page Comics in Review.
This is episode number 266, the Christmas 2021 episode. Happy holidays to you, Jeff. How are you?
Geek me all knowing box set, stay open May 4th. I'm hoping Luke gonna be hot as before. This red looks hardcore and I don't want Sith running the galaxy.
Ho ho ho, Matt. I am holiday-tastic, and if I sound a little worse for wear this morning, it's because we're recording this at what is 8:30 in the morning for me. On Tuesday, the day before it goes live yesterday, was Pam's birthday, so we just spent the whole day doing Pam's stuff. We went to I'll tell you about this, Matt. There's a AMC Theaters has a thing called Dreamscape in a few places around the country.
Yeah,
they're virtual reality experiences. You go in, and we did one called Alien Zoo. So you put on like the goggles, the backpack. You have sensors on your hands and your feet that you put over your shoes, and you go into this thing, and you're basically on. It's like Jurassic Park, but it's like an intergalactic Jurassic Park. You're up on a satellite, and there are all these like alien dinosaur type things that you can see. We got spat upon by this one guy. And then we got attacked. Our pod got attacked by this creature that had the face of like the Predator.
Oh, wow.
And you had these virtual reality flashlights that you had to shine at. And I took the goggles off at one point, and there's no light coming from these things, but there was light in the VR wherever you were shining it. And you had to shine it at this guy as he was, you know, attacking the pod. It was really a lot of fun. So if there's one near anybody who's listening, I highly recommend it. It's short. It's about 15 minutes long. Like $20 a pop to go in, but it's really a lot of fun. There's like, I think, three or four different options for it. So yeah, that was fun. Non-Star Wars related, but how great is Spider-Man No Way Home?
Oh, wow. Oh my gosh. I took the whole family on Sunday, and I went into this one decidedly spoiler free. You know, I'd actually even muted keywords on social media and was just so pleasantly surprised with all aspects of the film from start to finish, as well as the I would like to call it the blending of the Marvel Cinematic Universe with its television counterparts. And that's all I will say, so as to not potentially spoil anything for somebody who hasn't seen it yet.
It's a movie that there were a million ways it could have gone wrong. So if you want to use gymnastics terms, like the degree of difficulty on this one was phenomenal, and I thought they stuck almost every landing. I have one minor quibble with it, but I won't really say anything until we're off mic about it, because it might be a bit spoilery. But I told everybody, like, this movie, I went in with high expectations, and this movie was better than it had any right to be. That's
it
what
was.
I was saying. So
And I particularly thought that J.K. Simmons' nude scene as J. Jonah Jameson was very artfully done. So
you must have seen a different cut than I saw, or I blocked it from my memory. Maybe that was the time I had to get up and go to the bathroom. But yeah, very, very good movie, and gives me a lot of hope for the next phase of the Marvel films.
I am really super excited for Phase 4. I cannot wait. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So
agreed. But we're not here to talk about Spider-Man No Way Home. We're here to talk about Star Wars comics. So Matt, what do we have news-wise for this Christmas week?
Well, this week we should be getting our March solicits from Marvel. However, we did get an added bonus in that we are going to be getting a Han Solo and Chewbacca series from Marvel. That's going to launch in March 2022, which is obviously this coming March. It's going to be written by Mark Guggenheim and penciled by David Messina. And it will follow Han and Chewie, you know, a few years before the events of A New Hope. So, you know, we're definitely going to be, you know, in the age of Empire with this series. But it's apparently going to be off to a smashing start as they are teamed up with Greedo.
Oh, wow.
On a heist for Jabba the Hutt. So looks, you know, wildly entertaining. You know, we've got, you know, we already had a look at four of the covers for it. And it's just going to be some nice old school Star Wars, so to speak. You know, and it's going to be fun to get something that's sort of, you know, set, you know, before the events of A New Hope. You know, it's nice to see that era being explored a little more. I do kind of wonder what this might bode for, you know, hopes for Solo: A Star Wars Story number two. And I know there's a very active and verbal drive to get a sequel to that movie made. I would love to see a sequel myself. But
It's funny how when you get some distance from something, sometimes your opinion can change or soften or completely do a 180 when you start looking at things for what they are rather than what you wanted them to be. It's amazing how much more you enjoy life.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And Guggenheim in an interview with StarWars.com said that, you know, he's really looking forward to playing with this IP, you know, and, you know, he says that, you know, like issue number one, you know, Greedo is on the job with Han and Chewie, and, you know, and he told Star Wars, you know, that we'll get a better sense of why there's so much animosity between them in episode four. He also says Tonga from Bounty Hunters is part of the story. So along with a few other characters who've already been established in the comics. So that's going to be intriguing to see what happens there. You know, I think it's going to be wildly entertaining. You know, we'll see how it spools out. And of course, I'm a fan of David Messina's art. We've seen him on some of the pages of current Star Wars comics now. So, you know, it should be quite interesting. So,
excellent. Yeah, that should be a lot of fun. It's always good to get a Chewbacca and Han miniseries.
Oh yeah,
usually a lot of fun.
Very much so. Also, if you are still a reader of the digital comics, do note that Comixology is having a massive sale on all of its Star Wars, almost all of its Star Wars titles. You can get up to 67% off. I mean, you know, and to give you an idea of the pricing discount, you can get the Marvel or the Star Wars Heroes Omnibus, which collected the Lando miniseries, you know, the Chewbacca, you know, a couple other, for $4. Now, yeah, it's digital. You know, you have to remember that, but it's a heck of a price, and it's a great way to sort of plug in the gaps in your digital collection, or, you know, if you're looking for stuff that's out of print and you don't want to pay sky high prices on eBay. This is a really good, quick, easy way to do so.
Yeah, if you just want to read them,
or you can just read them. Yeah, there's always that. So. And of course, as always, you know, we've got some of the latest variant covers for upcoming issues like the High Republic number 14 and Halcyon Legacy number 1 on the Facebook page, as well as the Han Solo and Chewbacca variants, including a really kick-ass one by Alex Maleev, where he has done, in my mind, the perfect blending of Alden Ehrenreich and Harrison Ford as Han Solo, so which is, you know, that's no easy trick to pull off. So, you know, of course, you can find those on the Facebook page and the Twitter feed. But as we say every episode, it's a lot cleaner on the Facebook page and easier
right.
to find these things. So. And that's all we got, except for the fact, like I said, you know, I do expect the full March solicits to drop. Sometime this week, you know, in the build up and the lead up to Christmas. I may be wrong, but I don't think that I am.
It's happened once or twice, but
we'll
assume that you are indeed correct, and we'll have all that news. If it does drop, we'll have it next week.
Yeah, totally, totally.
Yeah, so, well,
and of course, it'll be on the Facebook page, and then
exactly.
we will follow up, you know, a couple of days later with final order cutoffs and actual tentative release dates, since everything is sort of in flux. Oh, that's one thing I should say, is because, for example, Halcyon Legacy, number one, was due to start January. It got pushed back to February 2nd.
Okay.
So.
Halcyon is one of those words that does not get used enough.
It does not. It's also one of my favorite songs. It's from the Hackers soundtrack by Orbital. It's called Halcyon and On. It's great.
Never saw Hackers.
Oh, it's a fun movie. It's dated. It's very, very
right.
Dated. But it's a fair amount of fun. So definitely, you know, do check it out if you get the chance. I think you can get it on Amazon Prime or something right now for free. So highly recommend.
Oh, okay. I'll check it out then.
Oh yeah.
Well, we do have two books to discuss today. We have Darth Vader number. I had it right in front of me.
19.
Number 19, thank you. And we have the High Republic Trail of Shadows.
Yes,
number
we
3.
Do.
And is that 3 of 5, did we decide?
Yes. Oh, no. Well, we didn't decide it. Marvel decided it. So.
Well, I assume that they decided it based upon our decision. Because that's how they roll over there at Marvel. They listen to everything we say. So what do you say we start with Darth Vader number 19, now that I have inflated my own ego sufficiently to continue.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's do
this cover. This cover, man. Yeah.
Kind of ominous. Yeah, it's a good cover. I like it too. Very, it's almost like it's a, it reminds me of, like, you know, remember like when you were in junior high school or elementary school and you would do art class with wax and you would, you know, scratch into the wax.
Yes.
That's a, this is what it reminds me of. So
yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And of course this main cover is by Ryan Stegman and Richard Isanove. There are, of course, a couple of variants, including a Lucasfilm 50th anniversary variant, as well as a Russell Dauterman and Matthew Wilson variant. And of course, that Lucasfilm 50th is by Chris Sprouse, Carl Story, and Niraj Menon. This book, written by Greg Pak, art by Gio Villanova, colors are by Alex Sinclair, letters are by Virtual Calligraphies, Joe Caramagna, and his free Krispy Kreme donut. assistant editor is Danny Kazem. The editor is Mark Venezia. For Lucasfilm, we've got senior editor Robert Simpson, creative director Michael Siglane, art director Troy Alders. From the story group, we have Pablo Hidalgo, Matt Martin, and Emily Shkukani. And of course, we have the creative art manager, Phil Shostak, Broaxium's number one fan, and I think our podcast's number two fan. So anyway, this whole issue is rolling out of the events of War of the Bounty Hunters. Vader, of course, is seeking out the perfidious population of Crimson Reign operatives within the Empire. And of course, he's got his chief
Crimson number. Dawn.
Yes, Crimson Dawn. And of course, he's got his chief number two, Ochi of Bastoon, leading the call. And if you'll recall from last issue, they picked up, you know, six willing crew members, if you will. So it's almost like an Imperial sanctioned bounty hunters. So, and we open up and we are on the planet Vincorba, and which is where they are launching. However, we open with a flashback that melds elements of the prequel trilogy. And it's... you know, it's Anakin, you know, and we see, you know, his conversation with Padme in Attack of the Clones, where, you know, when they're on Naboo and in hiding, you know, I don't think the system works. Well, how would you have it work? Then he goes, well, he goes on to say, well, we need a system where the politicians sit down and discuss the problem, agree what's in the best interest of all the people, and then do it. And of course, Padme explains, well, that's exactly what we do. The trouble is that people don't always agree. And then, of course, we get that ominous foreshadowing of a line, well, then they should be made to. And I like how Gio has illustrated Anakin here. And then, of course, the way Alex Sinclair has colored it, because Anakin is shaded and you can see the elements of Darth Vader, you know, on his face. And it's kind of frightening. And
it is. You know, these flashbacks, when we started with a flashback, I thought, okay, another flashback, because we seem to begin every one of these books with a flashback. But I never mind it, because it's always done really artfully, and it always makes sense in context of the story.
It very
and
much
you're
does.
Absolutely right. The shadowing of Vader on it, and then, you know, when it finally ends, we get an end with Vader, the bottom of Vader's helmet in that panel. Yeah. So yeah, it's great.
Yeah,
I don't mind it at all.
And then, you know, because like, you know, the second page is, you know, a flashback to the Phantom Menace, you know, with Anakin leaving Shmi, you know, and then again to Attack of the Clones, you know, where he's recovered Shmi from the Tusken Raiders. And it's just, you know, it sort of, you know, stems, you know, we see his past traumas. And then, you know, and that's what leads into that, you know, at the bottom of page two, we have a completely black horizontal panel with Vader, you know, clearly it's Vader, you know, order through power. The only thing standing between us and chaos. And then, boom. Now,
and that's how he sees himself.
Yeah. Now, this is interesting, because now we're on Laycor in the Outer Rim, which is a little different from the narrative crawl we got here. So, because it says to the planet Vincorba. But so perhaps I'm thinking maybe, you know, this is, maybe Laycor is actually a part of Vincorba?
Yeah, I was a little lost as well. Wasn't really, I was just kind of going along with it. I thought they'll explain it later.
But they didn't.
But they didn't. But I do like this image of Vader standing on this ridge with Balance in his full Imperial regalia,
which is still a bit unsettling to my eyes.
It is. But I loved it. Just this. Nice little mesh you got here, huh? As he slides down this ridge, and you see the dust coming up. I just love this image. It's really the art and the colors are just. It just looks like a comic book.
It does.
That's the best way I can describe it. And it just makes me happy.
It reminds me of some of the run of Dark Horse in the 90s.
Yes. And Vader and Valis are talking, and Valis says, "Why am I here, Vader? I thought you needed me leading Dark Squadron." And Vader is always quick to remind him, "I do not need you at all, Valance. But if you wish to prove your usefulness to the Empire and ensure the safety of those dear to you, you will do as you were told." Nice little, you know, callback slash exposition. So we remember that he's doing this because they've threatened the rebel base on which he left. What is the kid's name? The daughter of the.
Cadelia.
Yes, thank you, Cadelia. I knew you would remember Cadelia. And they've threatened to find that base, so they know where the base is. They threatened to root it out. But then we have Ochi talking to these stormtroopers, and Ochi's really feeling his oats. He's, "I don't know how you do things here on the backside of nowhere," which I love. "Where I come from, you pay attention to an Imperial seal if you want to keep your head." And this trooper says, these troops are all they've got... you got a lot of attitudes. And so you're official representatives of the Emperor. And Ochi says, "Hey, you can read. I'm Ochi of Bastoon. This is Balance with a B." And of course, Balance corrects him and he says, "Sure, sure." He says, "Three Revengers fighting for principle and three assassins fighting for money. Either way, you don't want to mess with them." And again, this is like this dirty dozen or dirty half dozen that they've got here. And the big round droid just amuses me. I love that design.
It's an awesome design. That's one of the beauties I think about Star Wars comics is you get to see these really unusual droid designs. And, you know, it's just, you know, he's a ball with a little pop up head, which I'm here for.
Yeah, you know. it's amazing. And of course, then he introduces Vader. He says, and that's the boss, Lord Vader, who you do not want to talk to. Now, let's see how well you do at dealing with me. And all of he says, "Now what happened here? No jerking us around. Valance used to be a grunt like you. He knows all your little tricks." And so the trooper says, "Nothing to hide. Just looks like the locals didn't pay their tribute on time. So they got themselves another Crimson Dawn attack." So we're to assume that they've come upon these people.
Yeah. And then I like how, you know, these residents go, "Which you did nothing to stop."
And Ochi's like, "Really?" And the troop says, "Come on. These people have been Jedi sympathizers since the old days. They get what they deserve."
And that's interesting because, you see the bas-relief, and it looks like somebody holding either a saber or a lightsaber. So, actually, it looks like they're holding a sword and a lightsaber. So,
and one of the guys in the crowd says, "You stood by while they murdered us. You laughed." And another one says, "Haven't really stopped either." And, you know, say what you will about the Empire, but they typically are not that uncouth.
Yeah, not callous.
At least not the rank and file. Yeah, not. And so Valance, of course, is getting mad, and Ochi recognizes, he says, "I guess you were more respectful back when you were in the white armor," to Valance. And we get another, flashback to, I'm assuming that's Padme.
Yeah, that's Padme.
Maybe consider that we may be on the wrong side. And he's, "All right, enough fooling around. Everyone clear the square." And the troops are trying to get him to move out of the square. And Ochi says, "Here it comes." And then they pull their rifles, and the... I can't remember the name of the Trandoshan, but he jumps in front of them.
Tanka, that's right.
The three Revengers jump in front. They said the people are just trying to care for the dead, so let's not. But the troops just open fire.
Yeah.
And Valance tries to stop them, and Vader jumps in front and deflects all the fire back onto the first one who fired, the ringleader. Doesn't kill him. And then I love this shot with the Tonka saying, "All right, then." And they're all, I guess they're dead. I'm assuming they're all dead. They're all at least knocked out. Dead. Because Ochi says, "I thought we were hunting Crimson Dawn." And Vader says, "They were Crimson Dawn."
Which seems kind of obvious.
Right. And Chilla says, "How do you know that?" And Ochi says, "No idea, Chilla. Why don't you go ask him?" And he says, "I'm good." Tonka says, "If they ignored Crimson Dawn, they were Crimson Dawn." And Ochi says, "Yeah, I don't know if that's technically accurate, but I like the passion, Tonka. That was our village guardian," they tell her. I tell Vader, "She saw sickness in the galaxy and she sliced it away, just like you." but she was murdered for it. He said, please, please be careful, my lord. They're telling him, and Ochi says, hey, what do you know? These guys actually were Crimson Dawn. They find a communicator with the logo. And Itaka says, you doubted Lord Vader? And Ochi says, what? No, you doubted him. Never. I just love this backbiting and backstabbing. It's hilarious. And so Ochi figures out that Crimson Dawn's got a secret base in the foothills and says that's where they're taking our little local heroes. And he tells Valance that the objective is to kill every Dawner. But now it's a basic scouting mission. I know you're a fancy pilot, but now you're still a bounty hunter at heart, right? You'll be right at home down in the muck. Look around, see what you can see, report back. And Valance grabs his cape and he says, what's a trick, Ochi? He says, trick, come on, Valance. Everything's exactly as it seems. And Valance says, that bad, huh? And Ochi says, you're working for Vader. What did you expect? So he takes the Revengers down into this valley. He says, we're all new here. We don't have any time. Just give me your name and assets. And this is a good way to get them all introduced to us again.
Yep.
And I love that Tonka says, I can do pretty much everything I look like I can do.
good.
And Sierra, which is the weak way, says, so tough and fast, smarter than most. That's helpful because sometimes I'm a little thicker. And Ankala Sam introduces herself. She says, I'm the leader, so I'm not quite sure what you're doing here. And Valance says, you and me both. I guess my job is to keep you on the job, which probably means dying. And Sierra says, what are you talking about? And he says, well, we're just the bait. Because you're all Revengers, right? Lost your family to Crimson Dawn. Ochi's got you marked as a bunch of true believers who will happily blunder out into the field and draw fire while he sits up on the rise with his assassins and gauges the enemy's strength.
But that
Tonka says that doesn't add up. Yeah, Lord Vader saved us. Then he saved those villagers. He carries a laser sword like the old heroes. So it's nice to be reminded that your average citizen doesn't know about the Sith.
Exactly.
They equate lasers, lightsabers, laser swords with Jedi exclusively.
Yeah, and and despite the Empire's best effort to eradicate all mention of the Jedi, there's still that deep-seated lore about the laser sword carrying mystical wizards, who would keep order.
Right. And that's where he says, look, Vader serves the Empire, that's it. I don't think he's doing anything for your sake. And Sarah says, well, what good have we ever seen them bring us, meaning the Empire? And I'm assuming that's Ochi starts laughing from up on the ridge.
Oh, always.
And Tonka says to Akala, she says, it's all right, Tonka. They're just killers fighting for money. They don't know us. They don't know the power that comes when you fight for something real. And then there's a bunch of krakooms, a bunch of explosions. And Ochi's like, aha, here we go. And he says, Loriach, what are we up against? And Loriach is the one who's dressed like Constable Zuvio. So 7 Crimson Dawn soldiers in the field, 10 more lobbing ordnance from the maces. And G90, is this time to roll? No, G90. The whole point is to get a lock on the Crimson base home base. Crimson Dawn home base, rather. And I like this bubble that they've got that the Revengers and Valance have over them.
Nice little portable shield.
No, she says, give them another minute. And he says, they're not going to last another minute. He says, well, better than us, huh? And then he gets levitated, and Vader shows up. He says, it appears that your plan needs more bait, and throws Ochi down into the pit with them. And I love it, because Valance says, oh, you're working for Vader, Ochi. What'd you expect? Shut up!
And I got to say, contextually, from a standpoint of the way the panels are designed here, it's a really nice arrangement, where we have the main panel up top, the inset with Vader, reaching out his hand, and then the three horizontal panels, where we see the action of Ochi being tossed into the firefight. The colors, I think, flow nicely because, we're on finally a temperate world for once. And, but with the way that the laser bolts are being drawn and the letters added in, it's a nice, easy segue and a very easy page to read.
Agreed. Yeah, it's all, everything flows. Your eyes naturally go in the direction that you're supposed to.
Yeah, and then we turn the page and then we get some very unusual panels here. But I like them.
They're sort of all, it's sort of like a mosaic or, stained glass, but the whole situation is a little off kilter. So I don't mind it at all. I think it works.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So G90 says, should we go down and he's, and, they found the base. Lariachi has found the base. He says, two clips left from Plum just beyond the draw. All right, bomb the hell out of it and get me out of here, Ochi says. And Vader just says, no. He says, no. And Tonka says, look. And there, Vader just goes right down in. He's on top of G90. I have to just imagine him doing like a barrel roll on top of it as it's rolling. Is he standing on the middle section that doesn't move?
I don't know, because Vader himself is not moving, but clearly G90 is rolling down. So, perhaps maybe that little middle band is stationary.
Maybe so. Yeah. Which I don't know how that would work, but it doesn't matter, cause it's cool. It's funny.
I love it. I think it's cool. Yeah. I think it works. You know, it also brings to mind those wonderful droid designs from the prequel trilogy.
Yes. And of course, Ochi says, G90, where are you going? There's more of them here. And he says, that's your problem, Ochi. I'm just getting the boss where he needs to go. Vader jumps down and just makes quick work of everybody there, like he always does. And, cuts his way into this base. And he walks in and he goes, he finds him. And Ochi jumps in and goes, I got him. And just starts shooting at him as he gets away, starts getting away.
And missing the heck out of him.
And I'm trying to figure out what's going on here. He says, get down, and he's about to throw a detonator. Vader grabs it and I guess throws it himself.
Yeah. Okay. But that's the thing, though, because it looks like Vader tosses the detonator. He tosses it back through the entrance from where he came. You know, and, you know, so the two assassins.
Okay, what happens. Okay, you know, you're right.
So they get blown out. And then of course, Ochi is confused. Like, wait, I thought the whole point was to rub out Crimson Dawn. And Vader's like, no. Crimson Dawn is just a symptom. I will destroy the disease. And so essentially he is looting through this little data point here because it's got some pretty critical information. And, you know, we see, you know, we get an idea of who Crimson Dawn's operatives are. And this is a pretty potent page right here because, you know, but according to this, they're everywhere in every corner of the Imperial bureaucracy, and Balance says, all the way to the top. and then that's where we get another cut back to the attack of the clones scene on Naboo, and, you know, the Anakin saying, well, I don't think the system works. And then Padme says, well, how would you have it work? So that right there is giving us some foreshadowing, and, you know, and Vader, then we cut to Vader looking, and I can't even make out the Arabesh. I can see some vague outlines of Crimson Dawn agents, you know, looking, you know, from behind the holographic projection.
Like, is it an Athorian, maybe a Duros?
Yeah, you know,
you can't really make out faces.
No, you know, so it's like, huh. And
one guy looks vaguely like Hitler as well, which is interesting, without the mustache.
Yeah, saw that. And then, of course, Vader grips his fist, you know, so be it. He is going to make it work his way, which is, you know, ties back to the flashback. And we get a nice little to be continued. You know, so clearly, you know, this, you know, again, is drawing, I think, in parallel with Crimson Rain, because Crimson Rain is trying to fight the Empire. But, you know, they can only do so because the fact that, you know, the dawn is everywhere, you know, await the dawn. And of course, you have to remember, Ochi is also part of Crimson Dawn. So it stands to gain, or at least stands to reason, I should say, that anything Vader is learning, Ochi is in turn probably advising Kira about. So it looks like for every three or four steps Vader takes forward, he's going to get knocked back five or six steps thanks to Ochi.
I'd forgotten about that. I'm glad you reminded me. I'd forgotten, you know, because I'm just kind of going along, reading these as I go along. I'm not really thinking much about what happened last time. I'd forgotten completely that Ochi was working for her as well.
Yeah. So that's going to be very interesting. And then, of course, we get a preview of, you know, a look toward Darth Vader 20, which, you know, the Queen's Shadow returns. And, of course, you know, we've already seen that from the solicits, and that's going to be Sabe. So.
Right. Exactly. So that should be a lot of fun when it comes out. Really, really good book. A lot of fun. I like the interplay between all of the mercenaries here. And I especially like, you know, Vader just basically being on it up front about how he has very little use for any of them. It's great. So we'll take a short break and we'll be right back to discuss High Republic Trail of Shadows number 3. Okay, and now after that very brief break. We're back to talk about Star Wars High Republic Trailer Shadows number 3. And folks, I'm laughing because the solicits dropped right as we finished the last review. And so Matt took time to update the Twitter and Facebook feeds with all of that. So if you're responding, quickly. you're responding while we're recording. So yes. And it was quick. It was not funny.
So you can ignore what I said at the top of the show about news about maybe the solicits will be out this week, because I was right, they are.
No, we'll leave it in because you were right and you need all the evidence you can get. So we do have number 3 of 5 of Star Wars High Republic Trail of Shadows. The cover on this one confused me for a second. I forgot that one of our main characters is also a musician, a singer.
Yeah, Shan. I like Shan. She's an interesting character.
She is. She really is.
So,
So anyway, issue number 3.
Yes. Sorry, I'm interrupting you. I apologize.
No. I was ready for you to go on with the creative team.
Issue number 3 of 5. Well,
the machine, folks. What can we say?
cheap is free. You get what you pay for. chapter 3, Cold Comfort, written by Daniel Jose Older, art by Dave Watcher. Colors are by Giada Marchisio and Ian Herring. Letters are by Virtual Calligraphy's Joe Sabino. The main cover artist is David Lopez. Variant cover artists, those are by Gerald Perel and Annie Wu. Carlos Lau is handling the book design. Tom Groneman, we miss you, Tom, is an editor, as is Danny Kazem. Mark Panizia is the supervising editor. And then, of course, same team for Lucasfilm, with the exception of the story group, we are adding Jason D. Stein. As we have discussed before, this is set during the High Republic era. This is set after the Great Leveler has left Loden Greatstone dead. And of course, if you're reading in the High Republic, Tarek and Sarret have also befallen the fate of Loden, except they have yet to collapse into dust.
And if you're not reading it, you find that out in this book.
Yeah, you do. You do. But the crux of this noir investigation, it's a noir mystery set within the Star Wars universe, is that Jedi Master Emric Kaftor and Republic private investigator Sean Holt, they have been paired together by Stellan Geos because they want to find out what exactly killed Loden Greatstone. And so in the course of the first two issues, they had an encounter with the Nile, which they barely escaped from, and they're finding their investigation is being impeded by Arathab Fall. And so what they're trying to do is they're trying to piece together all the scraps of information that they've got before another Jedi is killed. And of course, given the tone of the High Republic of late, as we move into the next phase, it's not really looking good, you know. I mean,
no, things started out hopeful and got dark pretty quick.
You know, when StarWars.com has a story by Kristen Baver, whom I love, she's a wonderful person and a friend of mine. You know, which High Republic character do you think will survive? It's like, okay,
so things are getting real.
oh boy. So yeah, so there we go. So we open up, and I love, we're in Coruscant. We've got street scenes.
Really busy panel here too.
It's a very busy, very wordy panel. It's evocative of 1980s comics. But I think in this case, because you have to remember, any Star Wars comic could be somebody's first Star Wars comic.
Right.
somebody may see this on the shelf and say, oh, that looks interesting, let me pick it up. So Daniel does a really good job of sort of bringing us up to date without giving away too much, but without dragging it down either. And it's basically Sean and
Emric.
Thank you, Emric. walking with Stellan, and they're comparing notes. And of course, Stellan is like, well, Sean is like, the way I see it, it's pretty straightforward. And Emric is just like, nah, this is the least straightforward case. And Stellan is like, well, I'm just looking forward to hearing this. And then, Sean breaks down her thoughts on the case. All right. If Emric's right, someone in So's inner circle is compromised and feeding information to the Nile about the investigation. And that seems likely for the record, because them getting the jump on the Republic's inside man back on Vorzid was a little too much of a coincidence. And that we're pretty sure this guy Uttersson is betraying the Nile with whatever weaponry he's trying to unload. So all we have to do is raise his name in the next update, and one problem will take care of the other. Boom. Simple. So, of course, now Uttersson is, I believe, a Shadra fan, I want to say.
That sounds right.
I may be wrong. But, of course, Stellan is just like, well, the problem is we need information more than we need Uttersson stopped. And Emmerich's like, well, agreed. Whatever he's selling, if it's what did that to Master Loden, we need to know more about it. That weapon, whatever it is, could bring down the Jedi Order, the entire Republic. And, of course, Sean is like, well, I just don't want us to wait till it's too late. And, of course, she's not Jedi. So, you know, she's willing to go into, shall we say, gray areas.
Right.
And, of course, you know, Kaftor and Stella Geos are just like, you know, they we have this sort of pregnant pause with no dialogue as they just kind of stare forward and going, yeah. Yeah, she's right. But that conflicts and contravenes everything that we've been taught and the code of which we live our lives by. So, and of course, then, you know, Sean breaks the mood. Anyway, it's my first night back on stage. You fellas going to come in and enjoy some music or stand here yammering about all the things that are about to go wrong? So, you know, that's where we cut to Nile base camp in no space.
And I love the difference in tone with the this part of the book and the part we just left. It was, you know, bright, not necessarily shiny, but bright and grimy, I'll say. And this is just dark and spooky.
Well, it's no space. It's not.
Yeah, and this guy looks like a freaking vampire. It looks like Morbius.
Well, this is Marky on row. So
right.
So, you know, of course, you know, and so we get to see him without his big eye helmet for once. And yeah, you're right. He does look like a vampire. And I like the Morbius reference. So
I just saw the trailer.
That movie's going to be awesome.
It should be. And he's talking to Uttersson. He says, yes, very well, bring it to me then. But Uttersson, I'm told the Republic has two of their hounds on the hunt for me. Someone selling a weapon on the black market that could bring down the Jedi Order. What I said, any word on who this mysterious seller could be? And Rove says, well, they seem to be, think a Tarnab named Arathab Fowl is involved somehow. He murdered someone on Nile on Vorzid V recently. Vorzid 5, I guess. And Hunter sounds like a Tarnab, you say? Says, yes. Why, have you seen one lurking around? He says, no, a Tarnab, I would remember. Filthy, hairy things. I've always kept my distance from those beasts. Says, indeed. Well, stay alert for him. It's likely a very fraudulent scheme of some kind, but we have been betrayed. But if we've been betrayed, well, he says, I will my eye. And as he's talking, as he's saying it, the Rode just cuts him off. And he says, and I love it. Uttersson's exclamation of Bosavir's bathwater. And we cut back and his lackeys are there. And he says, they say, what would you have us do, I? And he says, follow him. I don't trust that mange crested gutter rat. And if he's betrayed us, have him lead you to this Tarnab, then make them both suffer before you end them. And the way these guys look, it's like very, very steampunk looking. I love it. Gritty.
It is. And it's just, well, you know, that's the whole thing about the Nile is that, you know, we've said before that it's evocative to us, you know, like say like, you know, the Reavers in the Firefly universe, you know, and that's, you know, and that's not a bad thing, but you know, these guys are very slapdash. You know, make do with what you got, you know, but they want to project this aura of intimidation and nefariousness. And these costumes really do it. You know, it's very much like a, you know, it's almost like, you know, Mad Max in Star Wars, you know, courted, got married and had a baby.
Yes, that's a very good, description. So from there we cut back to the nightclub where she's performing. And
this is an amazing 2-page spread. You know, we're at the Baba Blanks. I love this name, Baba Blanks Midnight Den.
Right.
and we are seeing some great creatures, you know, in and throughout the crowd, including you know, is I can't tell, you know, looking from behind, is that a pike playing a sort of bass-like instrument, or is that an Amonoman?
I can't tell either. If I had to guess, it would be a pike because
the shape of the head
and the Amonoman, it would have but I don't know. Yeah, it's hard to tell. It looks more like one of the creatures from John Carter of Mars.
Thark. A Thark.
Yes.
So I'm a big fan of John Carter, the Warlord of Mars. And so I spent the summer of my 19th year commuting to my job at the Museum of American History on the bus. And I read every one of Edgar Rice Burroughs' Mars novels on the bus. So, yeah, that was the summer of Mars.
Emmerich and Stellan are having a conversation. They realize that she's doing a swanky cover of the creepy lullaby that's been haunting both of them for years, for months. And they figure out that Stellan has found who it was, a nurse named Rustha. I'm not even going to try to say that. That's too many letters, Star Wars. Come on, get it together. The nurse died almost a decade ago, an angry woman from Dalna. And Emmerich says, well, her musical selection wasn't very nice. I'll make sure we swing over to Dalna and do some digging. And Stellan says, well, I did run into some areas of the archive regarding Dalna that have been deleted, which I must say is quite unusual.
Yeah, it is, you know, especially because, you know, we thought that was just,
planets, the events and Attack of the Clones.
Yeah. So,
yeah. And so he gets a call. He says he has to go back outside to talk to Marshal Criss. And he tells Emmerich to order him another round. He comes right back and he says, that was quick. Stellan, what's wrong? He says, we have to get to Starlight immediately. There's been another attack. And from there, we cut back to
the Nile.
Coruscant, yeah. The rat doctor, as they call him. And he gets beset upon by these two thugs. He says, what's the matter, Doc? Run out of creepy little experiments? And he says, I've just been speaking with the Eye, in fact, because of the importance of our cargo. He's given me authority to execute any Nile that I consider to be hindering the progress of our mission, which is not true, but fine, we'll go with it. And the guy says, one of them says, come off, right? He says, anyway, who would you? And an alarm goes off. And they're being boarded. All Nile to battle stations were being boarded. And from there, we cut back to Starlight Beacon, and we get Dr. Janol,
there you go.
Janol, which is just a creepy and a weird creature. I love that. But he's kind of bringing them all up to speed. This is where you learn what's been going on in the other books if you haven't been reading.
Yeah, which it's, you know, you should be. I mean, the thing about the High Republic is it's very interconnected. If you haven't read the books, you're seeing references in the comics to events in the books and the novellas and the stories that you otherwise would, you know, you would be unaware of. So stands to reason if you're, you know, you're reading the comics, you're probably reading all the comics. So, that's both a good thing and a bad thing. It's a good thing. It's because, you know, it does emphasize the overarching aspect of this effort to tell stories in this era. But, you know, it's a lot of reading.
So. It is. It is. And so we just bring us all up to speed that Tarek was exposed to some kind of calcifying agent. And because of his connection to Sarit, he is now also, this connection has caused it to, the husking effect to spread.
Exactly. You know, because Tarek and Sarit, they have that bond between themselves. So.
And Avar Criss says, is it possible that this ailment uses the Force as its conduit?
Ooh.
And we hadn't thought of that. And Emmerich says, just like how some pathogens can only be transmitted through the bloodstream. And Stellan says, stars, that would be... And he goes, I can't be certain, I'm afraid. The doctor says, well, we'll definitely need to explore that possibility, Emmerich does. Just based on his appearance alone, this could be an early stage of the decayed matter that Master Loden had been turned into. And Keeve is there, and he says, can you tell us what happened, Keeve? And she recounts, she's we're undercover at an Alpha facility. They brought something out. It was huge. A monster towered over me in claws. And Emmerich stops. She says, it's okay. It's over. You're safe. And he gives her a hug. And his partner, Shan, is looking. And I love the way she's drawn because she's a little surprised there. And he tells Akivi says, we'll stick around a few more days. Hopefully, maybe you'll remember some more until they can get some rest. He says, oh, well, I'm staying here with them just for now until they wake up. And there we cut back to the Nile ship. And the three from before are saying, how in the void did we end up getting boarded? And their other Nile say, well, the ship popped up out of nowhere right on top of us, almost like it had a path drive of its own. And are we sure they're not bloody Nile? And Nautilin, that's a Nautilin, right? Or yeah. He says, well, I didn't recognize the ship and they wouldn't answer the cons. Didn't have time to light them up before they were too close. And the Rhodian says, I think I heard something. And make ready, my Nile. And I think it's coming from above. And they do get beset upon by, we don't know who this is yet, do we?
No, but this was our guy from last issue, because you know this is who they encountered, when they were getting close to one of the investigations,
right?
As part of their investigation. So you know he's clearly a bad dude.
Very.
And again, I like how this page is drawn, as we see him coming from above, and then we go around and we see the Rhodian and the Nautilin, and you know we see the Shadrafan, and it's awesome.
It is. And so from there, we cut back again with quick cuts back and forth. If we were watching this as a film, we cut back to Starlight and they're talking about what has happened. And you see, nobody's really gotten a good look at it. And everybody has had a different description of the monster. And yes. Shan says, could this all be some kind of hallucination caused by that vile gas? And Stellan says that calcification is no hallucination. And she says, no, but it's a chemical we don't know about. It could be causing both. And Emmerich says, well, a chemical agent that moves through the force somehow, it would be highly unusual. And Stella just loses it. Says that it was there. I was there on Grizzal. It wasn't a hallucination. Just storms off and they're looking at one another. And Shan goes after him and he stops her and says, wait. And we get, if you remember it was the High Republic Adventures where they were doing the Great Race, wasn't it?
Uh-huh, exactly.
So we get a connection through there because we get a Padawan running through. Hi, Stellan. Mr. Stellan. Hi, Master Emmerich. Hi, pretty lady I've never met before. I say, hey, kiddo. And Stellan says, it's a race. Padawan's letting off steam is all. They've been through a lot, just like the rest of us have. And he says, listen, I'm sorry I lost my temper. There was something there, a living thing. It wasn't just a hallucination. I believe that I felt it. And it was like nothing I've ever felt before. And they get interrupted by Chris. And I think I mentioned Chris earlier, but it was Shan that was asking the questions.
Yeah, Shan was asking the questions. So.
She says, I presume you had a pleasant journey. And she, you know, looks pretty grave. And Emmerich realizes he needs to leave these two alone. He says, all right, we're going to go. Thanks for your hospitality, Marshal Chris. And Shan says, well, that was awkward. A lot of history there, huh? He says, yeah, you could say that. We were all Padawans at the same time. Avar, Stellan, and Elzar. They were a tight crew, maybe more than that. Who knows? Now we're all grown up with the galaxy hanging in the balance and things are more complicated, it seems. I stay out of it best I can. Anyway, come on, let me show you around the station. And we get this battle on the Nile ship intercut with him showing her around the station, which I think is really interesting. And this next page with this guy just laying into everyone, the way this is drawn, it looks brutal, but I love all the purples and greens in it.
And I think if they had gone with another color choice, it would take away from the dramatic effect here, because it's like, because like we said at the top, earlier, this is a dark, dank, almost musty environment. Light is not welcome here. And by going with this jarring color palette, for lack of a better term, it really just enhances the overall impact of not just the Nile aesthetic, but how it preserves the suspense and the horror. And so I want to single out Giada and Ian for their work on these pages. I doubt they're listening, but we see what you've done and it's amazing.
And it's a nice counterbalance to the warmer tones on Starlight Beacon.
Yeah, the openness and the airiness and the light bathing everything, and everything is illuminated. So
they're clearly two different environments. It's almost like two different books, but it's not jarring. And that's that's what I think is most impressive, is the fact that it all flows. And so Utterson ends up shooting the Nile in front of him, and he says, that one about... And so apparently he's in league with this guy.
Oh, yeah.
And he says...
Yeah, I think we kind of had that perception, you know, toward the end of the second issue that they were working in tandem. So,
and so they then there's another alarm when he says, "What the?" And we get this look of this image of this spider ship outside. He says, "Attention now, cruiser, you're about to be boarded."
And you remember where you saw that?
Where did we see that? I know we've seen it before. Was
the
this
High
in
the High Republic Adventures?
Okay, that's what I thought. So they're really melding the two together.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. And of course, you know, don't forget, you know, Daniel writes THRA, so.
Right. So it makes sense. And so then we get Utterson saying, "Bust of yours, bloody bathwater. We were so close." And we cut back to Starlight Beacon, and we see all these images that we've seen in other issues.
Which is fun. I like
great, this. Yeah. The great race, the Jedi and Padawan training, which we saw in the annual, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and just, you know, it's just M4, you know, showing Shan around. So.
And so then we see these two people come on the ship, the Nile ship. He says, "What a void forsaken mess." And he says, the droid says, "These Nile were killed by dismemberment. It's a masker here, no survivor." So these are the two that the Eye has sent.
Yeah.
"No survivors from what I can tell. And he says, "In the ship that attacked them," he says, "evisceration, something with claws that Tarnab most likely." And the Dura says, "Electrocution, judging from this charring. It jumped away just as we arrived."
And of course, the Eye is not happy.
Yeah, he's actually growling. He said, "We could be wrong, but just from the going from the look of it and the way it hit that leap to hyperspace, good chance it's got one of our path engines," which is the second time we've heard that.
Well, yeah, because remember, the Nile's path engines are what's enabling them to jump around like that.
And I love that this droid is just sort of amused by all this and intrigued. He says, "Blaster bolts tore this into shreds, absolute shreds, tut, tut." And then they find Utterson still alive. Says, "One survival, that filthy Shadrafan doctor of yours wants to finish him off." And again, the droid is like third-degree lacerations ranging from the superorbital ridges to the nasolabial fold. Will definitely be permanent scar. Significant blood loss due to further injuries on the torso. Could be fatal.
Yeah.
And so. Rose says, "No, if that ship did have a path engine, it means something. Someone really has betrayed us. Utterson may or may not be connected, but if he's dead, we'll never know. Keep him alive for now." And again, that image of him just standing in what looks to be empty space on this platform.
Yeah. That's
is just brutal. Amazing.
So.
And from there, we cut back and it's a nice, nice transition to Emmerich and Shan looking out into space. And she says, that moment earlier, he says, "Stellan and Evar, oh, they'll work it out. They always just know with Keeve." Oh, he says, "Well," he says, "I know what you're thinking. The Jedi are supposed to be stoic and unflinching, not ruled by our emotions. And yet," she says, "that's not what I was thinking." He says, "I was thinking you looked like you could use someone holding you with the same gentleness you had for Keeve." And you can see him soften there. And he doesn't really know how to respond. He says, I'll be honest with you, Shan. Whatever this is, whatever the Nile have, we've never known anything like it. It could destroy everything. Yes, the Republic. Yes, the Order. But those are just ideas, institutions. They matter, of course. But really, for me, it's that everyone I've ever cared deeply about has been Jedi. Until now, that is. And that gets a smile from her. And so he says, and yes, we don't let our emotions rule us, but that doesn't mean we don't feel them. Yes, I'm afraid for myself, for my loved ones, and yes, I am a Jedi. But yes, I am also, and she hugs him, and he says, a human. And we get this image of them embracing. And this issue was kind of all over the place for me. I liked it better than the first issue, but not as much as I liked the last issue, issue two.
Well, I think what we're seeing here is, you know, because of the space limitations, because it's a 5-issue mini, I think maybe perhaps they should have made the judgment call to expand it to 6, maybe even 7, because, you know, we're tying a lot of threads together here. But you know, the issue for me is still very good. It works. But you know, now we're getting these threads, and you know, we'll see how it plays out in issue 4 and 5 before we ultimately decide if it should have been expanded. But you know, we're seeing so much stuff here, especially with Kaptor, you know, now all of a sudden, you know, making googly eyes at Shan.
Right.
and of course I'm a little bit confused, but in a good way, because, you know, I, I was kind of getting the feeling that Utterson was working in league with that Tarnab. So did he make the conscious decision to tell the Tarnab, look, just, you know, wreck me, you know, so that we can keep the eye off of us.
That's what I don't know. Yeah. That's what I'm not sure about, because he's nowhere to be found. So there's still a lot of mystery. Revisiting, I enjoyed it a lot more reading through it the second time with you here, but, it really does kind of feel too jam packed. I would have rather seen, I don't know. I wish they could streamline the story a little bit, cause we're going to get a lot in the last two issues to tie everything up.
We are. But, you know, ultimately, like I said, you know, we'll see if it's too thick the closer we get to this end. But still, the novel approach of this miniseries is working very effectively, in my opinion. And I am really here for it. I like how it's doing it. So, you know, I hope it opens the door for more stuff. So, but
agreed.
Yeah.
So, and like I said, it's a good book. It's a good series. I'm looking forward to see where it goes. I worry that it's going to be too jam packed in the last two issues to really be enjoyed as fully as I want to.
And that's a fair assessment. And you know, we'll see how it rolls. I mean, I trust Daniel Jose Alder's writing.
Agreed.
And so you know, so I'm not worried about it in the least. I think it'll work, no problem. I may be wrong. You know, with what they did that with what. The Han Solo, a Star Wars story adaptation. Remember, they ended up, it was supposed to be 5, and they ended up boosting it to 7, you know, to add more detail.
Right.
And that miniseries really benefited from that. So,
agreed.
You know, it's never a bad thing to have more issues.
Agreed. 100%. So those are the books for this week. Since we have the solicits, Matt, what do we have for next week?
Well, next week, if the schedule holds, we will have Bounty Hunters number 19. And Star Wars Adventures number 13. Star Wars Adventures number 13 was initially supposed to be out this week. It got pushed back a week. So we'll have those two brand new issues that we will be reviewing. We will also have out next week, we will have Star Wars Volume 3, War of the Bounty Hunters trade paperback, which of course is collecting the War of the Bounty Hunter crossover issues 13 through 18 of that series.
Okay, excellent. So we'll be back next week to discuss both of those. Until then, I hope everyone has a safe and happy holiday, whatever you are celebrating this time of year.
Yeah.
Until next week, for Star Wars Splash Page, I'm Jeff.
I am Matt.
And may the Force be with you.
Always.
The Star Wars Splash Page theme song is Mark Hamill Can Handle by Chris Cape. Check Chris out at chriscape.com and on SoundCloud, on Twitter at Chris Cape, and on Facebook.
Stop peeing!